Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. It's David Summers. And here comes another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. This is the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now, let's step back into the ring and back into time. Let's get wall-to-wall, tree-top tall, with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. Hey, Ron, I got to say, for the fans that already have your TennesseeStudStreaming.com channel and watched last week's Studcast, last week's was number 385, as I did, they got to see the best Studcast ever done, in my opinion. The combination of your experienced explanations of things and all the choice of videos to enhance the show made the end result absolutely phenomenal. So, like so many others, I've been listening to Studcast for years, but I have never heard or seen anything like what you're doing now. I think it's really cool.
Well, thank you very much, Dave, for saying that. But I have to admit, I enjoyed doing the last five of what I call the new Studcast, because that's exactly what they are, and certainly not like anything that I've ever done before or that we have ever done before. And we are stepping into a whole new realm of possibilities here. And to my knowledge, there's never been a wrestling company owner or booker doing a weekly wrestling podcast about the history of what was happening in his territories years earlier. So I'm kind of in a world of my own here. So my telling the story is one thing, but when you add the videos that go with the story from the TV shows 44 years earlier, you have something totally unique, man, in podcasting. It's hard to believe. I've found so many of my original TV shows from back in the 1980s and can now offer my fans the best old school wrestling podcast, I think, in the world.
Well, that's no exaggeration, Ron, and it also is not hard to believe. For only $4.99 monthly, $4.99 monthly, just 17 cents a day, fans can get the new Studcast you just described, plus hundreds of other hours of your old-school wrestling history for $1.99 a month. And if that's not good enough, they can save 15% more and get an entire year of wrestling entertainment for only $49.99. That covers the whole year. $49.99. You're done for the entire year. All right. There's already close to 300 hours of all kinds of your own personal programming there now, with a couple of hundred more hours still coming that you're going to be loading up in the near future. So then on top of all that, you're giving fans the new Studcast absolutely free. All right, that has to be, it has to be the best deal in wrestling.
Well, geez, I no longer, man, want to give fans basically an inferior quality Studcast. I guess I've kind of spoiled since I've gotten these old TV shows where I can really give people a chance to see as well as hear the Studcast. So I have to remind fans that we've been saying this for the last couple of weeks. I'm totally committed to making sure every Studcast listener It's the upgrade experience of the new Studcast on the streaming channel with all the bells and whistles for free, absolutely free. And please listen closely, because this, basically, fans, is the last time you're ever going to be able to hear a Studcast where you have always been able to hear them. And they will be there no more after this number 386 here. And you basically, I think you owe it to yourself to simply spend the $5 to find out what kind of new Studcast you're going to be missing on the TennesseeStudStreaming.com channel. So hopefully you will continue the Studcast ride for 1 month free, where we will be able to see as well as hear something you have never heard before on a Studcast. Saddle up, try it out. That's what I recommend. And we're also working on a Roku outlet, so you can watch from your own TV. We're going to make it available in more options than where it is now. I think we're at a crossroads here, I think, Dave. And I just want to give fans the best I can. And that's what we're going to do.
All right, that's pretty cool. The potential option to have Roku as an outlet, so you can use your TV along with this form of media as well. This is huge news, and it can be a sad day for thousands of fans. So please continue to saddle up with us and experience the new Studcast ride on the awesome TennesseeStudStreaming.com channel for the best Studcast ever. Speaking of huge news, you mentioned this in the last Studcast. So where are we going to be riding in this Studcast, Ron?
Well, this is a great example of how Southeastern was still improving its product back in 1981. Normally, all four markets got the same card every week. You know, that's the common deal here. But not in this Studcast. For the first time ever, it's going to be the first two nights in the third week of January 1981. Both had totally different cards, and totally different cards than the other two markets had. So both of which were maybe one of the best ever. These cards were just absolutely, truly amazing. When I look back at them, I, to my research, I was blown away by these cards. The first of these two cards was in Birmingham, Alabama. It was on a Monday night, January the 19th, 1981. And we were going to give away for the first time in the Southeastern Gulf Coast Territory an automobile in a one-night tournament. Not just any car, Dave, but I'm talking about a loaded, beautiful black 1980 Corvette. $16,000 prize back in the day. I'm way ahead of you, Dave. I've already gone and looked at the figures, man.
Okay.
That car was worth $64,000 in today's money.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. That's a tremendous way to start the week. So did any of the other Southeastern cities even know about this car, the whole car deal, the car being given away?
No. It was just the beginning of the Southeastern big item giveaways, though. We're going to have a bunch of them, man, coming up from here on. And in the coming years, we're going to give away some beautiful, not just cars, but custom vans and, a little bit of everything.
Okay, so it was definitely going to be a huge night for the fans and some wrestlers as well.
Well, that was just one of the three big events that night. Besides the 10-man one-night tournament for the Corvette, there was going to be a world championship match on the card. Les Thornton was going to be defending his world heavyweight championship belt against Norvell Austin.
All right, that's amazing, Stud. So how many matches was that going to be total that night? And I can't believe that you had a world title match along with, on top of, the Corvette tournament.
Well, man, we're not finished yet, Dave. I said there was a triple main event. There's another title match on this card besides the world title and a 10-man tournament for a Corvette. Bob Armstrong was going to be defending his Alabama championship belt for the first time since he won it more than 2 months earlier on the first night Southeastern wrestled in Birmingham. So he was not going to be defending it against just anybody, though, but somebody who had become basically an overnight star man in the territory. And I think one of the scariest wrestlers in the territory's history, he was going to be taking on Mr. Saito. And that card was going to be 11 matches in all.
Well, I had forgotten about Bob being the Alabama champion. So that made this a real super card. But I bet there was no way you were going to give Mobile on the next night anything near as good a card as this one.
Well, I wouldn't be so sure about that, Dave. You know, it was a good enough card to move that smaller, good to leave the expo hall. Once we found out how good a card we could piece together here, we went to the main office and talked to them about getting into the main arena, which we were able to do. So we left expo hall and 2 weeks ahead of time and decided to take this event into the main arena. Because we had five main events on the Mobile card.
Wow. So the Mobile main arena, five main events. Wow, that is crazy.
Well, this card, man, had its own one-night tournament, another one-night tournament. This tournament was for the vacant United States Junior Heavyweight Championship belt that had been held up in a match between Jimmy Golden and Jerry Stubbs 9 days earlier. And along with that championship tournament, it had four other championship matches. Southeastern Tag Championship match between the champions Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose going up against Paul Orndorff and Norvell Austin. They had a Southeastern Championship match with the champion Tennessee Stud taking on Johnny Valiant. Had an Alabama Championship match with the champion Bob Armstrong defending against Mr. Saito. Then in the world, there was a World Junior Heavyweight title match, just like Birmingham. But the opponent for Les Thornton in this one is not going to be Norvell Austin. It's going to be the former United States Junior Champion, Jerry Stubbs.
So that was two really spectacular cards back to back. What a way to start the week. So how could you possibly put together one TV show that would cover all of this? How do you capture all of that in an hour?
Well, every man in the crew basically had to show up 90 minutes earlier than usual to get everything done before the studio audience obviously was allowed in and to find their seat in the bleachers. So we're going to spend an extra hour and a half beyond what we normally do. We are going to put together three different personality profiles, record three different personality profiles, one for the two stations in Birmingham, a different one for the Mobile television station, and a third profile for both the Dothan and the Montgomery markets. So they had three sets of basically 16 minutes of totally different TV interviews for each channel, each station. They were shot and inserted in the commercial slots in each of those TV shows. And that was going to fill out all the different markets with the interviews that matched their cards. And it was not often that we did this. Gosh, we couldn't afford to, basically. Very unusual, in fact, that we did it. But we had an opportunity to start our week with a bang, and hopefully we wanted to see if we could end it with one as well.
Wow. Okay. And people don't understand that you're paying for 1 hour's worth of time on TV, and then you're also paying for production. And back then, that meant everything that goes into anything pre-recorded on the show. So you had a lot of dominoes that needed to fall into place to put a show like this together. All right, I can hardly wait to hear what this next TV show was going to include with all these matches of all different kinds. How many video inserts does this studcast have in it?
This one, I guess I could say it was loaded. It just gets better and better every week. This one is obviously, as I said, loaded. It had three different videos along in just one of the personality profiles. just one of those profiles had three different videos. And, you know, all this had to be done on a Saturday, 2 days for Birmingham, mm-hmm. 2 days before their matches. Mm-hmm. They were going to be on the matches going to be 2 days after we got these recorded and sent out there to the stations. So on Monday, January 19th, 1981, they had a tremendous card with a Corvette given away, a world championship match, and an Alabama championship match.
I don't know how to deal with so many big cards at the same time. So how about we take these TV shows one city at a time, maybe start with the first big one of the week, like Monday night, Birmingham, Alabama. Take us there.
Well, the basic TV show is going to be seen in every TV market, and our basic format for standard format for a Southeastern show was five live matches. You had a personality profile. You had four sets of interviews during the course of that program, and they all had to do with every match. Those interviews that we cut, you know, was going to it had to do with every one of their specific matches on their card. So, wow, we were really getting into some real we'd never been. Basically, we were doing something that we had never done before. And so it was really a heck of a day. In Birmingham, they were going to have five matches in the opening round of that Corvette tournament. And almost every one of those first round matches were a combination of wrestlers that had been feuding with each other. For instance, Tennessee Stud was going to be facing on this card Johnny Valiant. Jimmy Golden was going to be up against Jerry Stubbs. In a battle that had already cost Stubbs his United States Junior Heavyweight Championship belt, and Golden had lost the belt as well, since they had you know, the first remember the first weigh-in they had, Stubbs popped Jimmy in the eye and busted his eye.
Right.
And then after Jimmy beat him for the belt, they had another weigh-in to check and see if Golden was overweight, and it turned out he was, right? So it was going to be the winner of the U.S. Junior title. That belt was held up because Golden was overweight, because Stubbs had lost it. And that was going to end up being Mobile's, one of Mobile's big events. One of those, what was going to go on in Mobile was going to be a U.S. Junior title tournament the next night after the Birmingham event. Mm-hmm. So Brad Armstrong, and in spite of his cracked ribs, he was going to be battling Dennis Condrey, who was definitely partially responsible, at the very least, for causing those cracked ribs. Paul Orndorff, who was new in the territory, was wrestling somebody very familiar to him from the Mid-South territory, where they had both recently left to come to Southeastern. Robert Gibson was facing Randy Rose, who was a staunch opponent of his brother, Ricky Gibson, for many, many, a long, long period of time when Ricky was there. Just, not, I guess, probably maybe 3 months before Robert showed up.
All right. I'm sorry. I just got to laugh. I'm thinking back about Jimmy Golden and Jerry Stubbs weighing in. I watched that last night, and I couldn't help but just giggle when I was watching that whole deal. All right, so I'm finally able to get an idea of how these huge events, in a way, connect to each other. The United States Junior Heavyweight Championship Tournament the next night in Mobile was going to have two of the wrestlers in the Corvette tournament, in that tournament as well, along with four other wrestlers.
That's very good, Dave.
I had a giant chart to put all that together.
You got to have a giant chart to put this studcast together. And there's so many people involved here. But you're right. Robert Gibson and Brad Armstrong, they're going to be in both those tournaments because both of those qualified as junior heavyweights.
All right, so how do you get the TV show started with tremendous cards like these?
Well, after Charlie Platt and Les Thatcher opened the show, telling fans all the fantastic things, basically, were going down that next week, coming week, you know, they focused on one of the things happening in particular, a tournament to be held for the United States Junior Heavyweight Belt. And that's where basically we're going to get our first video today and the many that we're going to see here. And this was an extremely loaded studcast, obviously, because of these cards. And Les Thatcher was about to tell everyone why the U.S. Junior belt was on their set. So Jerry Stubbs was on his way to the ring for the first match of the day. But as Jerry was wont to do, he stopped off on his way at the set to visit with Charlie and Les and kind of to stick his nose where it didn't belong, basically, as usual.
I think he had a comment. All right, I have no idea what this could be about, but I can't wait to find out. All right, so we got Brian ready to go, and he's going to set us up with this piece of history. Here we go.
And Charlie's second title change involved this, the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship belt. Jimmy Golden defeating Jerry Stubbs, but after that match, Golden was weighed in and was over the weight limit. So
over the weight limit, so why don't you just give me my belt back?
Well, because
I told you he was overweight.
Because of your unsportsmanlike conduct, because of the situation, the National Wrestling Alliance and Don Curtis have elected to hold this belt up and have a tournament for it.
He can't hold the belt up. The belt should come back to me.
Well, this is their ruling, and this is what they said. The belt is now in limbo. There will be a tournament for the championship.
That's okay. Hey, that's okay. I'm going to get the World Junior Heavyweight Championship, and I'll be back for that when you count on that.
Former U.S. champion Jerry Stubbs, we said, Jimmy Golden, just a scant pound and some ounces over the weight limit, but enough to eliminate him, and the belt now in limbo. There will be a tournament for the United States Junior Heavyweight title. Today.
Indeed. It's about time to get our first match underway today. Let's go to the ring for the introduction.
Your attention, please. Our first match, one fall, 10-minute time limit. Your referee, Tommy Weathers. Tommy Weathers, your referee. Introducing in the corner to my left at 218 pounds from Dothan, Alabama, Ray Harris. Ray Harris. His opponent at 225 pounds from Atlanta, Georgia, Jerry Stubbs. Jerry Stubbs.
Former U.S. Junior Heavyweight Champion. That title being held up because of Golden winning the title from Stubbs, and Golden later found to be overweight in that category. Body slammed by Stubbs.
Jerry opening up, and of course, Stubbs very upset about the situation. First, losing the belt to Golden. Secondly, having the belt taken away from Golden because of him being overweight. And now the belt has been held up, as you mentioned at the top of the program. But Jerry Stubbs, a tough competitor, right now with that front chancery on Ray Harris. Harris looking for an opening here for a handle. A nice short ride on the suplex, takedown, and pulling the shoulders of Ray Harris up. Might have been a little early, a try for a pin, but Stubbs didn't want to take a chance. He wants to do a little damage, and he is blocking Harris. Harris has his speed, but Stubbs certainly with a major portion of the experience in that wrestling ring right now, Charlie.
And he maintains that chancery on Harris. Harris looking for some means of escape. Stubbs, a former champion, using that headbutt.
Stubbs back to that front chancery once again and applying the pressure. Ray Harris gaining experience with each outing, Charlie, but when you're in against a man like Stubbs, you've got to be out there 100%, whether it be mentally, physically, or whatever, because Stubbs is always finely honed. You may not appreciate his tactics, but you've got to appreciate the fact that the man does win and win with a lot of consistency.
You have to admire Stubbs, the intensity this man goes through every week. We've talked with Jerry on several occasions, and he spends a lot of time in the gym staying in condition.
And recent weeks, Jerry has been going through a lot of mental anguish involving challenges for his belt, that belt being held up, being defeated for it, etc., and on, and Jerry Stubbs venting that frustration on one Ray Harris.
Side headlock by Stubbs now. Harris takes the fan over into the ring. Good shoulder smash by Stubbs. Takes Harris up.
Harris coming up slowly now. Stubbs staying right on top of him. It's one of the keys that's made Jerry Stubbs such a potent offensive weapon in the wrestling ring. He presses for advantage and keeps his opponent moving at all times. Right now, Ray Harris trying to break Stubbs down. Stubbs through the advantage, certainly here. Stubbs talking to me earlier, Charlie, before the program, mentioning that he wanted to become the ultimate junior heavyweight wrestling machine in his sport. And you can't say that the man does not have the tools to do it. Harris battling back now. Ray Harris getting his first shot offensively and handling Stubbs well.
Stubbs fighting back now in that corner. Good forearm and connection to the side of the head. Stubbs takes his man over in that turnbuckle. Comes off. There's that Jerry Stubbs power slam and into a pinning position. That's it.
He's got it, Charlie, with a power slam and a body press. Jerry Stubbs comes up with a win over Ray Harris.
Okay, no doubt you were right, Ron. Jerry Stubbs had no business expecting to just walk away with his former belt after the first weigh-in where he busted Jimmy Golden's eye. Golden had already beaten him the second time, but was over the 225-pound limit.
Well, Stubbs was impressive, man, with what he could do in the ring. And he showed it in that match that we just watched. And he and Golden was going to be facing each other again 2 days later in Birmingham, Alabama, in that Black Corvette tournament. So what happened next, Dave, in the second segment of the TV show, was one of the worst things I had ever seen in Southeastern. Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose had regained their Southeastern Tag Championship belts the week before from Bob and Brad Armstrong. And the week before, Condrey and Rose showed the match of how it happened. Condrey used a foreign object on Bob, and then he went up on the top rope to jump off on Bob, who was laying there pretty helpless on his back, flat on his back. And Brad sees what's happening and crawls across and gets on top of his dad to keep Condrey from jumping on his father. And when he jumped off, he jumped across Brad's back and his ribs. And, all that went down about 8 days earlier. So Brad came to the set with Charlie and Les. Brad told them that his father had gone on a special meeting earlier that morning to nearby Columbus, Georgia, and was supposed to be back at any time there real soon. So Brad was going to watch the tag match again and have his comments, because the first time they watched this match, it was all Condrey and Rose making their comments. So this was supposed to be Brad and his father, but, Bob had to go to Georgia and make a quick trip. Wasn't that far up there to Columbus from Dothan.
Yep.
And thought he would be back. So Brad was going to take care of watching this video. So this is where we're going to get our second historic video, man, in this studcast. And wow, this is an awful example of somebody being out of control.
All right. So if this is what I think it is, I agree with you 100% on that. This will be a little bit hard to watch. So Brian is going to set the video up from 44 years ago. Here we go.
Brad Armstrong joined us now. And as we mentioned, we were going to show the tag team title change tape once again. And Brad, is your dad going to join us? Or?
Well, Dad had some business in Columbus, Georgia, earlier this morning. So I thought he'd be back by now, but he's not back yet. He should be back shortly.
We've got this tape, and of course, you know that we don't have to tell you the titles have changed hands. We talked to Condrey and Rose earlier, and we want to roll that tape and get your comments on exactly how this thing unfolded. So let's get into that tape
right
now. Here's the action, Brad, and at this point, it's Randy Rose pounding away on you, and they had battered you quite a bit this particular time.
Yes, sir. It was one of the toughest matches I've ever been in.
The father. Where?
Don't worry about my dad.
Oh, he scared me. You scared me at 30. He scared me at 30.
Oh, great
sister. And I'm going to have to say, so Tyson slaps this young gentleman, and Brad is not going to take that lightly. As he mentioned earlier, now Tyson with a karate thrust in the throat, Charlie, and Brad has almost stopped before it can start, and you can see as he rips his shirt off. The ribs have been wrapped, and this is the result of that tag team title match we were trying to show on tape here. Ty and Rose Usher are out here, and this is certainly all their idea.
Here comes Doorbell Austin, Robert Gibson, Roy Welch, and a host of others to try and break this up.
They got to his ribs. As you can see, Charlie, we brought it out. The ribs are wrapped, and Brad cracked some ribs when he saved his father in that title match. We saw that on the tape. And apparently, Rose and Condi have run this man, Saito, out here. And what can you say, attacking the guy? You can see the ribs are wrapped.
No call for that at all.
Well, that was it. One of the dirtiest things I've ever seen in wrestling. Not much else to be said about that. So who is going to be wrestling in the second live match?
It was Big Ron Bass, and he happened to have his little brother Donnie with him, and came to the ring, both of them carrying their bull ropes. They were going to have a tag team match that day on the card. Donnie hadn't been seen in that area in a long time, but he was still just as nasty as his big brother was. In fact, neither of the opponents could walk away from the ring when that match they had on TV was over. They both had to be carried out. So they came to the set after the match. Ron Bass made a big deal about warning everybody, all the wrestlers in the territory, that he and his brother were back together again and that they could expect to see some wrestlers in Southeastern very soon leaving. He thought that they were going to, half the baby faces were going to leave the territory. Ron Bass was full of it.
Okay, and so hopefully nobody stepped in it. All right, so how about the personality profile to be shown in the Birmingham market? Who was on that?
Yeah, we're going to just take one of these markets. Obviously we can't talk about what happened in these three different profiles that we're going to be doing. So we'll just take the Birmingham market, and 8 of the 10 stars that were competing for that beautiful 1980 Corvette were in this profile. And Charlie and Les, they also covered the fact in this profile that the card included the Alabama championship belt of Bob Armstrong versus Mr. Saito, and a World Junior Heavyweight Championship match with the champion Les Thornton against Norvell Austin. And predominantly this whole profile, about 6 minutes long of talking to 10 different wrestlers about what's going to happen in this tournament and what they think about this prize.
Okay. All right. So our producer, Brian, we're keeping him busy today. He's going to set us up with the personality profile on the TV show in Birmingham for Saturday, January 17th, 1981, 2 days before this huge card and tournament. Here we go.
Let's talk about the exciting 1980 Corvette tournament, a one-night tournament coming up. And certainly a lot of wrestlers are going to be digging hard to win this beautiful automobile, a very valued prize. In the first round pairings, Paul Orndorff, the former North American heavyweight champion, will be coming to the area. His first shot at not only the Corvette, but one of the toughest athletes wrestling in this part of the country, Outlaw Ron Bass. Charlie Platt is with him now.
Ron, a big night coming up for that 1980 Corvette. You have former North American heavyweight champion Paul Orndorff in the first round pairings.
I can think of no way that I'd like to start 1981 off and winning that 1980 Corvette right there in Boutwell Auditorium. I got a stumbling block right off the bat, and that's Paul Orndorff. Orndorff, you're no stranger to me. I remember you from 1978. I wrestled you all over the states of Louisiana, Oklahoma, all over there. And son, you know what you've got in store for you. And Ron Bass is going to win that Corvette, and you will be going down, baby.
Excellent first round pairings. With more on that, Les Thatcher.
With me, Brad Armstrong, one half of the current Southeastern Tag Team Champions, along with his father. We're going to talk to Brad in a moment, but another young athlete who has made his mark in the professional ranks will be in that Corvette tournament. In the first round, that will be Robert Gibson. He'll be returning to the area. This young man is finally a honed athlete. He'll be going after that beautiful Corvette, and his first round opponent will be Randy Rose. Charlie Platt is with him now.
Randy?
Well, we know one thing. Gibson, I've heard the name of Gibson before. There's one thing about it, Robert Gibson. I've heard of your brother, but you ain't going to make no reputation off your brother, just like Brad Armstrong trying to make a reputation off his dad. A new Corvette. Can you see the Rose riding in a new Corvette? I'm going to guarantee you right there in Birmingham, I'm going to be riding in the finest thing that you people have ever feasted your eyes on.
Randy Rose against Robert Gibson, first round pairings of the 1980 Corvette Tournament. Also in first round pairings, one half of the Southeastern Tag Champions, Brad Armstrong.
And of course, Brad, not only are you going after this Corvette, you're facing one of the men that you and your father defeated for the tag team belts. Now, you and I have discussed automobiles, and I know how much you like sporty cars, race cars, and certainly this Corvette would be a dream for any man age 6 to 60.
Yes, sir, it'd be a dream come true for me to win a Corvette. But I tell you, we were real fortunate to win those belts from Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose, and I've got Dennis Condrey in the first round. And hopefully Lady Luck will be with me again. And if I get by Dennis Condrey, then it'll be a big step on my way to win that Corvette.
A 1980 Corvette. Brad Armstrong wants it. Charlie Platt's talking to the man. He's got a defeat to get to it.
Dennis Condrey, you'll be going in first round pairings against a man who is one half of the Southeastern Tag Champions.
You might say 1980 was a good year for Brad Armstrong. Rookie of the year, 1980. One half of the Southeastern Tag Team Champions in 1980. And now, he wants to drive a 1980 Corvette. Well, that's fine and dandy. But you're looking at one man he's got to beat to get into another final. And that's Dennis Condrey. I need no recognition anywhere I go. Let me say this to you, Brad Armstrong, and you listen good. For a 1980 Corvette, I will beat anybody that steps in that ring because I like the car. I want to drive the car. It's a beautiful car. It's a big, black, beautiful Corvette. And Brad Armstrong, you will not ride in it out.
Now, with more or less Thatcher.
Certainly any time Jimmy Golden and Jerry Stubbs would step into the squared circle, it's going to be an exciting wrestling match. But it's going to be equally exciting when the prize for that wrestling match is a chance at a 1980 Corvette. And Jimmy Golden, you've got that same Jerry Stubbs in the first round of the Corvette tournament.
Now, that's true, Les. I want to tell you that I'm real excited about just being here in the Southeastern area because the promotion, Don Curtis, gives away more money and more beautiful prizes like this Corvette than any other place I've ever been. And I'm just glad to be here, and I'm glad to get my chance. Win, lose, or draw with Jerry Stubbs, brother. I've got a little unfinished business with you. You see this eye right here, don't feel good at all. And I'm going to tell you something. You might as well get ready to be expecting one upside your head, because you're going to get it. If it's the last thing that I ever do, Jerry Stubbs, you're going to get yours in Birmingham, Daddy.
I've talked to Jimmy Golden. Now here's Charlie Platt with Jerry Stubbs.
Certainly a lot of problems with you and Jimmy Golden of recent, and I think it comes to mind that there is a 1980 Corvette on the line in this match.
Well, you know, it's a tournament, a Corvette tournament, a nice black 1980 Corvette. Well, let me tell you, I was in a tournament one time before in Boutwell Auditorium, and I went down right down to the finals, and you know I got cheated out of it, but this is one time I won't get cheated out of it. I'm going to ride in a 1980 black Corvette.
Standing by with the Southeastern Heavyweight Champion, here's Les Thatcher.
Ron Fuller's had a successful 1980. He's regained that Southeastern Heavyweight title. And Ron, it's not on at stake in the tournament, but certainly a very expensive, beautiful Corvette is.
It's almost as important as any title, Les. A $16,000 beautiful automobile like that. It's a tremendous prize. I don't know if they've ever seen anything like that given away ever in Birmingham. And I'd certainly like to win it. I intend to win it. It's going to take 9 matches. Going to take 3 times you're going to have to beat people, and I'm in shape and ready for it, and I'm wanting that car.
And Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud's opponent in that first round, is with Charlie Platt. It's Luscious Johnny Valiant.
Well, I tell you what, baby, I don't need a Corvette. I don't need nothing else because I got a Hot Rod Lincoln myself. And I'm going to tell you something right now, Ronnie Fuller. I will on this given night here like a Corvette, because if it means beating you and kicking you all over the place, I'm going to do it. And I'm going back up north. Back up north. Big shiny Corvette. Big JV's gonna be right down funky Broadway in a Corvette, Jack. Oh yeah.
Corvette tournament, you won't want to miss.
You know what? That black 1981 Corvette has got some Southeastern wrestlers fired up. All right, Ron, take us to the next match.
Okay. The next one features the brother of Ricky Gibson, Robert Gibson.
All right.
And it was gonna be Robert's first Southeastern match ever. And let's see if we can get that handled, okay, Dave?
All right, and Brian is going to do his magic and set that up, so here we go.
Your attention, please. Our next match, 1 fall, 10-minute time limit. Introducing in the corner to my left from Pensacola, Florida, at 218 pounds, Robert Gibson. Robert Gibson. His opponent, from Montgomery, Alabama, at 225 pounds, Jimmy Jones. Jimmy Jones.
Jimmy Jones taking on Robert Gibson in our next television match here on Southeastern Championship Wrestling. A lot more action coming your way today. And possibly another injury. Those ribs that were injured on Brad Armstrong in that tag title match, those ribs possibly re-injured moments ago by Mr. Saito, and Bob Armstrong has not arrived yet here at the television studio. And if he was here before that discussion was over with, I can certainly understand that he is going to be in a bad state.
Going to be distressed, no doubt about it. Saito coming out here unscheduled, provoking Brad to follow him into the ring, and of course you saw what happened. Our first look at Jimmy Jones as he squares off with Robert Gibson. Jones, a rugged individual, but Robert Gibson, a fine young athlete, builds a lot of his offense around speed and movement, and he's willing to trade punches, as you witness here now with Jones, anytime, any place. Jones with a side headlock now. Robert trying to pry his way free. Working for position here, takes his man to the ropes, catapults him off, and he's caught with the tackle. Again, Charlie, I want to remind the fans, P.O. Box 1089, Dothan, Alabama 36301. If you're a civic group, school, or club would like to have professional wrestling as a fundraiser, drop us a line at that address, and we're happy to get in contact with you.
Just a minute. I don't mean to interrupt, but I just walked in the building. I walked back to the dressing room back there, and Brad's laying down. But I'm going to tell you something. He ain't out. I understand that Condry and Rose kind of pushed that Japanese gentleman out here to do a job on him. Well, he's really brave, isn't he? He's got his ribs all bunged up, and he did that for me. Now, I'm going to do something for Brad. I want that Japanese, if he's hearing me in any way, shape, or form, as well as Condry and Rose. Something's going to be done about this, brother. It ain't going unanswered. My ribs ain't bashed in. Something's going to be done. Right, Japanese?
Great Bob Armstrong, and rightfully so.
Yes, sir. And Bob, missing no words at all, tells Mr. Saito, let's do it your convenience anytime, any place. And as we all know, Bob Armstrong can handle the job, no doubt about it. He and Saito, that should be quite an interesting confrontation. Right now, Robert Gibson with the arm bar, windmilling it on Jimmy Jones. Jones trying to find a way out here as Gibson applies the pressure. You know, I've watched both the Gibsons come up through the ring, Ricky, several years ago when I was wrestling around this area. Saw him get his beginning, and now Robert Gibson following his brother's footsteps. And he's a fine competitor. Jones sets him up with an elbow and spins him around, and he hits the deck.
Side headlock, hip toss, takedown. But it's Robert Gibson coming up with those head scissors. Jones goes to the bottom rope.
Jones up, neutral starting position, and Gibson is waiting on him. As we mentioned, Robert has that blinding speed and uses it to his advantage. Jones picks him up, tries to push him away, but Robert, hanging tough, takes his man over and maintains the offensive with the headlock.
Over into a pinning position. Kick out on Robert Gibson, and he powers back over, holds on to that side headlock.
Gibson applying the pressure now. Jones trying to find his way out, Charlie. He's had his share of the match, but Gibson has been able to get back the advantage at each and every turn. Nice tackle by Robert as he makes the move again. Oh, almost got him. He got over the top. He shot out with that drop kick. One mistake and he went right into something else, thinking well ahead of himself. Look at here. Hook Jones coming out of that corner and rolls him up. And he's got a win.
That's it. A good win for Robert Gibson of Pensacola, Florida. More action to come today on Southeastern Championship Wrestling. Mr. Saito in action, and we'll be reviewing some very...
You know, it's been a long time since I've seen Robert Gibson in action, but seeing that on video, I had forgotten what a great wrestler Robert Gibson was. That young guy could stand in that ring with anybody. I thought he was just one of the best.
Him and his brother, man, yeah, they were really, really a great athletes, great wrestlers. And, wow, I was so proud of Robert, man, for going on to the future that he did. And what a great run he had with Ricky Gibson and with Robert, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Robert,
yeah.
His great partner in, wow, the Rock and Roll Express, Morton. Ricky Morton.
Yeah.
So, great wrestlers, both those guys, two of the best.
Oh, absolutely. All right, so who was in the last segment of the show, Stud?
Well, that was the Tennessee Stud, and he started at the set with Charlie and Les, and he showed a match between him and Johnny Valiant for the Southeastern title that took place 8 days, basically, before this TV show. And this was going to be the last video that we're about to watch here in this studcast.
All right, so I think I was in the crowd that night in Dothan, Alabama, when Southeastern sold out the 6,000 seat Civic Center. All right, so Brian, set that one up and play it for us. Here we go.
First of all, I want to say, Charlie, you know, I promised the people that I was going to boot John Valiant back to New York. Well, I didn't get around to dragging him around the building and booting him out of the area, but I did send him for a little visit to the Southern doctors at the hospital in Dothan, Alabama, and the boy's got 15 stitches in his head from this match, and you're going to see in this match part of just what happens to big John, luscious John Valiant. And after this match, he don't look so luscious to me, I'll be honest with you.
Indeed. I'll have to agree with your comments, Ron. This was a hard-fought match.
Well, it was a hard-fought match. I want to say, for John Valiant, on his behalf, he has got some guts, and he did stand in there, and he did fight almost down to the very end until he had to have his big Texan buddy, Ron Bass, come and help him out. And we're going to get rid of not only John Valiant, not only is he going north, but we're going to send Bass south, and I'm not talking about Texas, I'm talking about the Gulf. We're going to put him on a little boat and shove him out in the Gulf of Mexico, and he's going to be gone too at the same time.
A little Southern hospitality, brother.
Now you can see here, Valiant at this point is already starting to bleed. I've already busted him on that post. I run him into the post 4 times, and that was certainly enough to put that in his hair. You can see that red in his hair already. We are going at it. There ain't no doubt about it, Charlie Pack, because I don't like the man. I'll be very honest with you. I don't like the man at all.
Anytime
I can get my hands on him, anytime I can get in the ring with him, I want to. There you can see him. He don't look too luscious right there. He looks kind of red to me. I'm going to put a little tapping on him here.
Okay, I do remember that match now. Johnny Valiant's white hair was almost totally red with blood from a cut that night after I think you ran him into the steel ring post a couple of times before pinning him. This has been another great one. New Studcast with at least 5 videos, maybe 20 minutes long. So plenty of awesome wrestling content right there. Okay, so what about the results of some of those fantastic matches and 2 tournaments during this third week in January of 1981? Take us back, Stud.
Well, the Corvette tournament in Birmingham was absolutely spectacular. Paul Orndorff, Ron Bass set the tone for the evening, basically with the first night of the match, with a real brawl between the two of those guys. They both got disqualified. They both were eliminated from the tournament in the very first round. Golden and Stubbs, they went at it big time. Golden got himself another win by Brad Armstrong. Showed some real guts, man, competing with cracked ribs, taped up. Against Gibson and Rose had a great match with Robert Gibson winning. My match with Valiant was a pretty bloody one, but this time it wasn't him bleeding, it was more me bleeding. And he hit me with something very hard to make that happen, busted me, and I was extremely mad, and I got an opportunity to put my full leg lock on him. And I did something that I kind of regret. I broke Johnny Valiant's leg, man. And it was the last night in Southeastern that he was going to be there, actually. And we never heard from him again.
Wow. Wow.
So after breaking his leg, I wasn't too happy that happened, actually, to be honest with you, Dave. Ron Bass and his brother Don, they came down to the ring before I had a chance to even get out of the ring. And they were extremely angry about what happened to Valiant. He's laying over there in the corner, and they're trying to get him out of the ring. They're getting a stretcher to get him there. And so they were so angry that, they both jumped me, right? And then they started trying to break my leg. So that bench was going nuts. And all of a sudden, I look up, and there's my cousin, Jimmy Golden. And he came down, man, and he basically chased those two guys away just about the same time that Valiant was loaded on a stretcher and being taken back to the dressing room. Then in the finals of the tournament, Dennis Condrey won the Corvette against Paul Orndorff. But Randy Rose had to come and help him out. He took advantage of the referee getting knocked down. He hit Orndorff with something that pretty much knocked Paul out. And then his former tag team partner, Norvell Austin, went down to help Paul back to the dressing room. Randy Rose and Dennis Condrey, they had brought the Corvette into the building. It sat there in the back of the building the entire night. They went and got in that car, all sweaty and nasty, and they drove that car out of the arena. The cops had to help them, too, because the fans were very, very upset about the last match. Then Les Thorne successfully defended during the course of that night his World Junior Heavyweight Championship belt against Norvell Austin. And then in the wildest match of the night turned out to be for the Alabama Championship belt to Bob Armstrong, Mr. Saito was aided by his buddies, Condrey and Rose. And with their help, Saito was able to pin up Bob Armstrong and win the state title. Then they fought their way to the dressing room, and the cops again had to save the guys.
Man, another wild night. That had to be. Orndorff lost the car, Norvell lost to Thornton, and Bob Armstrong lost the Alabama title. So what happened the next night in Mobile's main arena?
Well, man, it was another big night, kind of like Birmingham. Brad Armstrong won the six-man tournament for the United States Junior Heavyweight belt with his ribs strapped. I mean, Brad was really showing he had some guts. Norvell Austin and Paul Orndorff, they won the Southeastern Tag Team Championship by disqualification, but they couldn't win the belts because you couldn't win them on DQ. But they did win their very first match against Rose and our boy Condrey. And I was supposed to defend my Southeastern belt against Johnny Valiant, but obviously he wasn't there. He had a broken leg, and Ron Bass took his place. And again, Ron's brother got involved. This time, he brought down a bull rope in the match, and he tried to choke me out with it. He was hanging me from the ring ropes, and then here again, my cousin Jimmy Golden came and saved me. So we took away the bull rope from them, and we chased those two guys to the dressing room. We went back to the ring and we challenged both of them. We said, "Guys, if you want to have a bull rope, there's two of you, there's me and Jimmy. Let's have a double bull rope. How about next week you bring your rope, we'll bring this rope, and we'll have a double one." So fans really got into that. Mr. Saito, who at this point was the new Alabama champion, he got disqualified to save his belt in the return match. Obviously, he had the match against Bob Armstrong again in the return match. Les Thorne got his hand raised when Jerry Stubbs got disqualified in the World Junior Heavyweight Tournament match.
All right, back-to-back great nights for the fans. So what about the attendances for all six nights that week? That was a lot of figuring to do at the end of the night, end of the week.
Yeah. Well, you kind of upped the ante there a little bit, didn't you, Dave? I mean, you threw in a couple of extra towns, but it's okay. I happened to remember Pensacola and Panama City because that was such a good week for us that those towns did extra well, too. Birmingham had the biggest crowd since opening night when we stuffed almost 7,000 into Boutwell. Put an all-time biggest crowd into Boutwell. And I'd say that crowd, I think they said it was 6,500. Mobile had 8,500 in the main arena. The other two main markets that week had a World Junior Championship match on their cards as well. That meant Montgomery and Dothan. Les Thorne had built a very strong following, man. We kept him on a lot of shows. He had actually done an interview in this show on the Dothan show as well, that TV and Montgomery TV. So Montgomery on that Wednesday night had 4,900. Dothan had 5,200. Pensacola, which was always a great wrestling city, had 5,100. And Panama City, we had a smaller building there, smallest building in the territory, basically, filled it up with 4,000. We had 34,200 fans in 6 nights.
Wow. 6 nights and almost 35,000. All right. I'll tell you what, this has been a special studcast because of the two events, but a tremendous week any way you look at it. I can't believe it, but we do have time. We're going to make it to a learning tree question, and I'm very happy because something happened in the studcast that fits in perfectly with the learning tree question. All right, this one comes from a resident of Orlando, Florida. His name is Steve Brown. He asked, okay, so how did the Fuller leg lock get started?
Wow. Well, that's kind of odd, isn't it, Dave? I mean, wow. You know, what a great question with what happened to Johnny Valiant in this studcast. I mean, I don't know who taught the inside toe hold to my father, but I'm very thankful for it. I can tell you that. My brother as well. It was probably the same wrestler that trained my brother and I. Plus, I think he probably trained hundreds of other wrestlers as well for Roy back in Roy's early days. That guy's name was Charlie Carr. The inside toe hold is, I think, the gentleman, Mr. Brown. The inside toe hold is basically one of those holds that works extremely well, and it gets a submission from everyone you put it on. Kind of like the sugar hold, but it's done in a totally different way. My father learned the hold and how it was done, then figured out a totally different way to put it on somebody that made the move look really beautiful. It was a simple move, and it didn't look fancy. And my dad figured out a way to do a deadly move and make it look pretty and fancy at the same time. But there was no way you could do what my father did without having long legs. If you didn't have long legs, you could forget doing this hold. You had to have it. So it starts, it actually started with something called a grapevine. And that's a very popular move in amateur wrestling. You get somebody on their hands and knees, like amateur wrestling matches have. They start on top, and you take your right leg, you bend it, you know, forward. You bend forward over the guy's back that's below you. You run your right leg between his legs, and you wrap it around his right leg, above the guy's knee, and you try to get it pretty far up his leg. At the same time, you hook your right foot behind your left knee, and you reach for the foot on the leg that you put the grapevine on, and you start to pull toward you, man. And wow, at that point, it's one of the easiest and most simple and, gosh almighty, the most painful submission moves in professional wrestling. So my father, you know, having learned the easy way of doing it, the way that everybody else did it, he wanted to take that move to the next level. So he invented this way of getting the inside toe hold. And basically, if you're standing behind somebody, you wrap your right leg around above the knee of their right leg, and you get as high up the thigh with your leg as you can. Then you reach back and you get the foot of the leg that you've wrapped your leg around. Then you put you run your leg behind your knee again. Same thing as you do when you're on the mat. Then you reach down, you get hold of that leg. And then that you're wrapped around, and you roll head first forward. It doesn't sound simple, and is not simple, to be honest with you. When you roll head first, the body kind of automatically, the body that you've got, you hooked their leg, he kind of floats over you, and he lands on his back. You land on your back. your butts are together and all your legs are all in a jumbled mess, basically, it looks like, laying on your backs. And at that point, you should have their foot, your hands. And as I used to say, man, when I think back at it, once you got to that point and you got that foot in your hands, it was time to go south with it, man. Meaning basically to apply the pressure.
Yeah.
So, but you had to be careful because it didn't take much pressure to tear the knee out or break the leg.
Mm.
And I didn't intend to break Johnny Valiant's leg in this stud cast or tear out his knee, but the hole was so affected that sometimes bad things happen. and that's what basically happened in that particular instance. So Mr. Brown, basically that's how the Fuller leg lock got started. You don't see it done much because it's a tricky move and you have to have long legs for it. And so my father and my brother and I, we never had anybody. Anybody escape the hold or failed to give up. Once you got somebody in that hold, they either gave up or you break their leg or tear their knee out, you know. And so you got a submission about every time. And I did. Every time I got that hold on somebody, except for one match in 1982,
mm-hmm.
when I had Ric Flair and a special referee. In a moment, you know, he told me, meaning the special referee later on told me many, many times how he regretted, basically he said, I regret it for the rest of my life, Ron, stomping you off. And I'm talking about Bob Armstrong.
Wow. You know, that, and I think that's probably the most pivotal moment of your career. Had to be that moment when Ric Flair interfered on that match. All right, another amazing learning tree answer, Stud. I got to say, too, your description of the Fuller leg lock sounded like you were playing with Stretch Armstrong at the same time. So that's just incredible. So another amazing learning tree answer. I have never heard anyone break down a wrestling move like that. Everything about you and what you do with these studcasts really makes them, in my opinion, the best thing in professional wrestling. All right, having said that, I have to say, for those listening, if you do not spend just $5 to find out how good these studcasts are and make sure Ron keeps doing these, then wrestling is going to lose one of the greatest spokesmen for the sport that has ever lived, in my opinion. All right, so where are we riding on the next big studcast?
Well, to another fantastic event, man. I mean, why are we following in big events with big events? The entire territory this next week is going to be getting two ring triple chance battle royals with the winners. And there's two winners in these battle royals, splitting $10,000. Plus, there's going to be another Alabama championship battle between Bob Armstrong and Mr. Saito. Paul Orndorff and Novell Austin are going to get their first shot at the Southeastern Tag Belts of Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose. The new United States Junior Heavyweight Champion, Brad Armstrong, going to be facing the former champion, Jerry Stubbs. And a match that will leave everybody amazed, I guarantee you that. The double bull rope match with Ron and Don Bass against me, the Tennessee Stud, and Jimmy Golden, it's going to shock the wrestling world, I guess is a way to put it.
All right, so we got that to look forward to next week. Any final words on this one, Stud?
In a way, Dave, you know, this kind of seems, I hate to say it, it kind of seems like a goodbye, basically, potentially to thousands of fans around the world and that may never hear another studcast because they don't want to try something new or something better. For whatever reason, for those that are not coming back to take the rest of the ride, I thank every one of you for your support and allowing me to be a part of your lives up to this point. And for everybody out there, please take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/dsummers955. On Twitter, now known as X, Dave_Doohan. On Instagram, it's instagram.com/DavidSummersProductions. And hit me up anytime at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud, LLC. Thanks for joining us today for this historic studcast. The true story continues next week. So full Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, two, three.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.